I started to work in the early 60s, and Tennessee had a deer stalking program already in place going, primarily from Clarksville Base within the Fort Campbell area. From that area, a lot of deer were stalked in middle and west Tennessee. And then later on, we started taking deer from those areas and stalking other areas. So it was a progression. It moved pretty fast. The deer sometimes were faster than the stalkers were.
I bet that was pretty exciting, trying to trap those deer and move them and know that you're making a huge impact.
Well, we wasn't all that confident.
Oh, really?
Because a lot of the counties had dog problems. You know, they'd be wanting to dog the deer, and it didn't hold up under that kind of pressure. And we had to go back in and restock. And there was a lot of different types of law enforcement work that had to be done.
I hear you.
And the officers did a good job. And we talked to a lot of the judges, and they clamped down pretty hard on somebody poaching deer out there. Back then, whenever you only put out 15 or 20 deer, it was critical. In fact, at that time, it could cost you your truck.
Yeah. It's an amazing success story. You hear folks saying, well, we didn't see a deer when I was a kid, and now you just have to walk out your back door and you got in a subdivision grazing or driving down the interstate highways or whatever. You see a deer just about every day.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if we're too efficient.
Some folks say back in the good old days, but I don't know. Right now, hunting and fishing is really good.
Won't you take me back to Tennessee?
The award-winning Tennessee Wildcast is on the air with the latest info about hunting, fishing, boating, wildlife watching, and all things outdoors. This year, we celebrate the men and women of the TWRA responsible for 75 years of wildlife conservation. Now make welcome your host, Jason Harmon.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Tennessee Wildcast. I'm Jason Harmon. I'll be your host today, and I've got some special guests with us today, and it's another theme that's happening around here. It's a look back. We've got some special guests with us today. We're going to look back on the agency and the successes and some of the fun stories that's happened throughout the 75 years of the agency. Mr. Johnny Allred is helping me co-host today. Johnny, welcome in.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're glad you're here. Just a little bit different, a few different faces around the table today, and I'm excited to have Johnny helping me co-host. But before we introduce the other guest, I want to jump in on a few things. We really appreciate our radio partners out there playing Wildcast and our Wildcast extras, and today we want to highlight a station out of Columbia. These guys are from down that area, so we thought we'd highlight them. WKRM 103.7 FM. They run Wildcast on Saturdays at 11 a.m. So we appreciate those partners, and especially this one here, WKRM 103.7. You can find them at WKRMradio.com. So great partners out there. It's also spring turkey season is upon us. The youth are out there this weekend, and the adults and others can join in on the fun the next weekend. So April 13th through May 26th is the spring turkey season. So we're excited about that. Always check your guide. Visit tnwildlife.org for all that information. Make sure you're up to date on your license at gooutdoorstennessee.com. All right, I think that's all the PSAs for today. We are excited to have Ed Penrod with us today. Ed worked for the agency for a long time and has a lot of history with the agency, and then he went on to work for some other folks, and we're going to learn all about that today. But, Ed, we appreciate you being with us.
Nice to be here. It really is.
Yeah, yeah.
Appreciate you inviting me.
Back to the spot where you used to, your old stomping grounds up here, I guess.
Right, yeah. Right.
And then we have Mr. Keith Seagraves with us, a longtime friend of Johnny's neighbor of Ed's and Johnny's, and all grew up together, so it's going to be a fun conversation. Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So, well, let's jump in first, just get to know Ed. Ed, tell us a little bit about yourself. I kind of had a short introduction there, but I'd love to hear more.
Well, you may not want to go back this far, but I grew up in Kentucky, went into service, got out of service, went to the University of Missouri, got a wildlife degree, and came to work for Tennessee.
Awesome, awesome. So was Tennessee your first wildlife position?
Basically, yeah. I worked for Kentucky's wildlife people while I was going to school some, but this was my first full-time job, and it was a great one.
Awesome, awesome. And you obviously grew up in the outdoors hunting and fishing, or was it something you fell into?
No, I grew up in it.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. So what was your favorite animal to chase growing up?
Oh, no question about it. Bob White quail was our favorite thing to hunt for, but it's slowly went down in population, and now I'd love to see those things come back, but I don't know if we'll ever be able to see them like we used to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a lot of people feel the same way. Even younger generations would love to see them come back as well, to have that opportunity like you all did back in the day. Yeah. We'll dive more into that later. I know we had that as a topic to talk about today, so that'll be fun to jump in. And we'll jump into more of your work with the agency and learn more today as well. But I want to slide over to Keith. Keith, thank you for being with us. Give us a little background on yourself as well, if you don't mind.
Well, I grew up in Murray County with like you said, Johnny, we've known each other our whole lives. And I've been a neighbor at Penrod for 50 years, and both of his boys were roommates of mine. We went to engineering school together at the University of Tennessee and grew up hunting and fishing and playing ball together.
Just having a good old time.
So now I'm 40 years into an engineering career with Alan Hoschel here in Nashville. And
all right.
Still getting out there and chasing those deer and turkeys.
Awesome.
We grew up hunting together, his boys and Keith and I. And growing up, there was no better knowledge for us than to go ask Ed something about hunting and fishing. And
don't blame me
for that. So he's probably the blame for the addiction we have that what we do, because he was a wealth of knowledge when there was no knowledge.
The very first
hunter safety course. We didn't know where we were going. The very first hunter safety course they were doing is probably early 70s.
75.
And Ed said, y'all all need to be here at this time. Everybody show up. And I didn't know what we were going for. And then
that course, did you, Mr. P?
Well,
he did that night.
One of the things that sort of helped start that was the fact that we got the youth deer hunt statewide. Mm. And before they could go on that, they needed to go through that hunter safety course. And it sort of worked, both of them worked together to help each other promote it.
Yeah. So are you saying you took the first hunter safety course in Tennessee?
I don't know about Tennessee, but Murray County.
Murray County.
Well, they all happened at the same time. There were like four or five that happened at the same time. It was the first hunter safety course they did, and he was kind of the
– It was a big part of that.
Start that. Yeah.
Very cool. That's very cool. Well, Johnny, remind folks what you do for the foundation.
Well, the foundation is a nonprofit set up to support Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency, whether it's land acquisition or anything. We help speed that process up for anything that they do, and that's kind of what I do. I work for the foundation to help support the agency.
Yeah,
with any needs they have.
And one of the big things that y'all, the one big fundraiser y'all do every year is coming up, and I think it's probably full now, but tell folks about that.
The Governor's One Shot is a kind of a flagship fundraiser for us. It happens here in about a week, and it's a turkey hunt, and they were kind of all over the United States. You know, a lot of states had Governor's One Shot turkey hunts as fundraisers, and ours just happens to be the biggest. It's a really big event for turkey hunters, and if you want a guide on the turkey hunt, or if you'd like to hunt in the turkey hunt sometime, you can contact me. Go on the website, you can find my email and contact me. We'll get you in there.
Perfect. Yeah. And Keith, I know you participate in that hunt as well. And I saw some photos from back in the day hunting with Daryl Singletary.
Oh yeah, double barrel Daryl,
man, he was a great guy, and
he needed both barrels.
Yeah, he did. He was a great singer, he's a great entertainer, and he was a terrible shot, but he was a great friend.
And he was a great supporter of the agency.
Yes, he was.
Oh yes.
Yeah, so we miss him for sure. And I just want to throw that in there real quick before we got too deep. But so Ed, let's come back and just kind of touch on your career. I'm excited to hear about some of the work that you've done with the agency and the work that you did and kind of helping and grow deer populations and grow turkey populations. But just kind of let's start with deer, and I'd love to hear some of those stories of stocking deer.
Basically, I started work in the early 60s, and Tennessee had a deer stocking program already in place going, but it primarily shifted from getting deer from East Tennessee, from Clarksville Base, which was a naval base within the Fort Campbell area. Mm. And from that area, a lot of deer were stocked in Middle and West Tennessee. And then later on, after some of those stockings worked out down at AEDC, we started taking deer from those areas and stocking other areas. So it was a progression of just taking one step at a time, and it moved pretty fast. The deer sometimes were faster than the stalkers were.
I bet that was pretty exciting, trying to catch those deer, trap those deer, and move them, and know that you're making a huge impact, because a lot of people, they didn't see a deer, right?
Well, we wasn't all that confident.
Oh, really?
Because a lot of the counties really had dog problems. You know, they'd be wanting to dog a deer, and at certain times, some of those herds didn't hold up under that kind of pressure.
Sure.
And we had to go back in and restock and all.
A lot more spotlight in those days, too, wasn't there?
There was a lot of different types of law enforcement work that had to be done.
I hear you.
And the officers did a good job. And we talked to a lot of the judges, and they clamped down pretty hard on somebody poaching deer out there. Matter of fact, at that time, it could cost you your truck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, y'all were spending a lot of time doing this work, and then for somebody to poach them, it was just ridiculous anyway. So.
Well, it didn't. We're losing a deer now doesn't seem very much, but back then, whenever you only put out maybe 15 or 20 deer, and you possibly lost your buck or something, it was critical.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's an amazing success story. You hear, hear folks saying, "Well, we didn't see a deer when I was a kid," and now you just have to walk out your back door, and you got, in a subdivision grazing or driving down the interstate highways or whatever, you see a deer just about every day.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if we're too efficient.
Well, some I was thinking about this the other day. Some folks say it back in the good old days, but I don't know. Right now, hunting and fishing is really good, and
except for the quail.
Yeah. Quail. And since you mentioned that, our guys are putting boots on the ground with habitat and trying to put the perfect habitat out there for those quail and bring those back. And I know it's been a hard battle. And ever since you were here, Ed, it's been a battle from the beginning, right?
Well, it we really don't know what the problem is. Everybody has different scenarios
sure.
on what the problem is and everything. And it's quite likely we just don't know, and we just about the only thing we can say. If we did know, we'd probably start at a different angle. But habitat is certainly one of the factors, but there's been all kinds of others. Predation and various others. Matter of fact, even hunting might have been questionable at one time, but I think most people realize that the regulations we had then, that was not a factor in the population going down.
Yeah. Yeah. And, sportsmen are called sportsmen for a reason. I mean, they know when they're shooting too many. They know when, they're hurting the population. They, even with the liberal deer seasons we have now, folks don't kill three does a day in Middle Tennessee. And
we didn't shoot coveys down below, seven or eight birds either.
Our dads would talk to us about that before we left to go quail hunting. Says, you don't shoot the coveys down.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, back on deer, Johnny was telling me a funny story about Murray County. Did y'all stalk deer in Murray County?
No, but we were pretty close.
I think they had one guy there that was a coon hunter, and he was kind of had a lot of influence there and didn't.
But the thing about it, I'm not too sure that even with the restoration effort, it accelerated deer coming back. Mm. But I think eventually the deer would have moved in. I mean, we didn't stock coyotes, and they've come in pretty good.
Yeah.
They're about
armadillos.
Yeah. So I think that we maybe were a catalyst in getting the deer going a little bit faster, but
sure,
it would have probably come on.
Well, and then the change in the number of hunters we have too. It you see a difference in how many deer or coyotes or whatever are coming out of the population because not as many hunters as we used to have.
Nope.
So, all right. Well,
I'll speak on that a little bit. We need more parents like he was taking these kids hunting.
Definitely.
I mean, he was focused on getting us out there in the woods and being sure our families took us and we need to get back to that.
I mean, we had some property to hunt, public and private.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You had more.
We had some access. So down in Hickman County, especially, we used to drive from Murray to Hickman County every weekend to go deer hunting, and we had
where the deer were.
Yeah, and we were blessed with a private property owner that gave us access, but he had joined all this public property that was right next to him, and we had some good times down there.
Yeah, I bet so.
And we also had another motive. The only way we could keep them out of trouble was keep them out hunting. And if they were hunting,
we're too tired to get into trouble otherwise.
So you, can you tell a story on them getting in trouble? Sure, should we keep that a secret?
I believe what took place down in Murray County, you probably need to leave it to us.
Maybe after the mics are turned off, we could have another conversation. But that's great. I enjoy hearing these stories. And I know with turkeys, too, turkeys has been a big restoration effort for the agency, and we've seen a growth in turkeys. Were you a part of that as well?
Yeah, that's... Deer and turkey restoration was two projects that was Pittman Robinson funded, and they both were, to me, a worthwhile thing that really benefited the sportsman in the long run.
Yeah,
it didn't take off like lightning, but it eventually came around. The turkey sometimes would more or less mushroom real fast. Deer quite a bit slower, but that's just the way you. Population grows for those two species.
Yeah.
But the turkey, gosh, I can remember only turning loose in a county maybe 15 hens and two or three gobblers.
Mm-hmm.
But you could wait 5 years and you could open that season up and you would have a huntable population. That type of regulation still applied to the deer, too. A lot of people liked that five-year opening because, boy, there was going to be some really nice bucks that first couple of years.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
So the you're talking about a nice buck. Do you think where these deer originally come from, the genetics of them is different in different areas? Like, I'm not, you might speak to where, I know they were.
Where they come
you
from?
You trapped them, the ones that come from ADC and the ones that come from Cheatham, did they come from different areas originally?
Originally, there was some various stockings that had deer from various areas. Yeah, they didn't all come from the same. However, a large portion of the stockings after the 60s were from deer out of the Clarksville base, which actually came from the southwest. And then those deer were put in areas, and sometimes we stocked from those cells. So actually that was still deer coming from a southwestern type deer.
Mm. Okay. Did any of them come from any other areas like northeast or some Canada?
I can't remember all the details on it, but there was, I think, a few deer from Michigan or one of the lake states that was released up around Crossville near Catoosa.
Yeah.
But sometimes those populations were so small versus the large number of deer that the odds were really probably in favor of the local deer, ones that's already there doing the breeding. Mm. But, I mean, because we didn't start out with two deer from one area and make sure that that species stayed without being interrupted by any other genes from other deer.
I just wonder if that's where we're seeing different genetics is because some of them come from Michigan area and some of them come from the southeast, and in the area near Crossville, they got a different looking rack on them than they do.
Certainly genetics are going to play a role in that, but the thing about it, like the deer from Clarksville base that went to AEDC, then deer from Clarksville base and AEDC went up on Carter Mountain, which y'all call something else now, but it's down
in
there
in
Franklin County. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some people, I think right now, even think that there's some difference in the genetics. Well, really, there may be, but it's happened in the few short years that they've been out because the sources were actually the same, and only 1 year apart from stocking AEDC to stocking Carter Mountain. Mm-hmm. It's the same.
That's interesting that we were thinking that that's where the genetics was different, but I guess it's kind of the...
One of the things that may affect people thinking the rut is different and all is elevation does have effect And Carter Mountain is quite a bit higher than yeah. down on AEDC. So that may there may be something to that.
A later rail.
We'll probably never know. But if you want to hear some good rumors, go to one of the checking stations or campgrounds. And
Everybody's got
Facebook.
Facebook. Everybody's got an opinion, that's and yours
camp.
Is wrong.
That's the hunt camp these days, Facebook, yeah.
And you'll hear some good rumors.
And,
I know one of the things that always struck me is we had quite a bit of pressure on the bucks whenever we – because if you wanted the deer herd to grow, you protected your does and harvest. It even came out then that we don't have enough bucks out there to even breed all the does. I mean, and that got being real a common rumor that you heard. Well, the Southeastern Wildlife Disease Center at Georgia, it was just getting started pretty good. And they had a ovarian analysis workshop for some of us, and we had collected a large volume of
reproductives. Collect ovaries when you shot a doe in those days.
And come to find out after evaluating this stuff, and a lot of good information comes out of the lab. Sometimes we think it feels, but out of that, almost 100% of those does had been bred. Along with the fact that quite a few fawns were being bred, which nobody really we hadn't heard that part of the rumor.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And you can see it at AEDC because they had a boom in population down there. There's so many that they opened up. One of the first areas opened up doe seasons to try to cull population down.
Yeah.
And so, really, you got to be careful of some of those rumors you hear. And if you can check it out in the lab and make sure that that is a fact. But
science is going to win.
Yeah, you got to be careful on those rumors, too. Throughout the years, there's been all kinds of rumors going around, you know. So, and it's funny what you hear on social media That's and out right. there, people talking and things like that. You mentioned Deer Check and the check stations. But before we started the show, you said one of the best things that's ever happened was the online check-in.
Oh, without a doubt.
And no offense, but, you know, younger guy like me thinks that's great. Some of the older folks out there miss those check station days, but you're sitting here telling me at 88 that you think that's the greatest thing.
Yeah, it's for several reasons. Not only for the benefit of the sportsman, I think it's a good tool to not have to haul deer any further than necessary.
Yeah.
And also get better hunter participation, because a lot of people are just looking for one more little hurdle that they have to jump to drop out of deer hunting. Or any hunting, you know. So you don't want to put anything that might cause some hunters to say, well, I think that's going to be the straw that breaks the camel back.
We've got enough obstacles to get over without having one more. So
that's cool. I never thought about it that way. Yeah. That could even be a tool in the R3 side of things. It makes it easier for that hunter to check their game in.
One of the things that we did growing up when we went hunting Mr. Pete's, we didn't wear bloody clothes into the convenience stores and restaurants and stuff. We changed clothes, washed up, and tried, you know, not to
hurt their image.
Not to hurt the image. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Never thought about that either.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, back on turkeys real quick, I wanted to just make a statement. You know, when I was growing up, I didn't see many turkeys. I grew up in Decatur, Tennessee, just north of Chattanooga, and I didn't see turkeys growing up. So born in 85, hunted all my life, and it wasn't until I moved to Middle Tennessee that I started seeing turkeys back on our family farm. And what do you think, what took them so long to go east, do you think?
Yep. Well, in some ways, it may have been a problem of if somebody saw a turkey in East Tennessee, he went home and got the gun if he could and hoped that bird was going to be out there in that field. But I think there's been a big change in sportsmen almost as much as there has been in the deer and turkey populations themselves.
That's right.
The people have changed a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it's for the better. They're for the better. It is to a degree. I would like to see a lot of deer hunters possibly look at trying to do what's best for the deer herd instead of how many points that deer has got. And I think that might help get that relationship back down, because it's hard to get somebody to harvest a doe now, even though at one time we were preaching that. We did too good of a job. Now we need to get them turned around where they don't look down on somebody having a doe.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of spoiled, too, because we just couldn't hunt does. And we look forward to the
opportunity. I remember the first doe hunt we had, we had to go stand in line to get a doe permit, and I couldn't believe they're going to let us shoot does. I couldn't believe y'all were going. The Ed was going, yeah, we need to drop these doe numbers down.
And we were going to Fort Campbell and AEDC and wildlife management areas trying to get their doe permits before they opened them up countywide.
Yeah, yeah.
But education sometimes is good, but whenever you got to re-educate something, it's a lot harder.
Yeah, change the minds. Yeah. Yeah,
you know, my boys are just a lot more spoiled than I. They'll say, go to the farm. I can go and get a doe any day.
Mm-hmm.
They're not as excited about participating in an antlerless hunt. Now, one boy is, you know, you have to tell him when to stop shooting them.
I think if my son would shoot anything right now, if we're trying to get his first deer, he's itching. So,
well, that's great. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Yep.
Encourage that. Yeah. Yeah. Stay with him.
Definitely. No, he's all in it.
He's the kind of hunter we need coming along.
Right. The old saying, if it's brown, it's down.
That's right.
Before we run out of time, we got a few more minutes here. Fishing. Did you grow up doing a lot of fishing, Mr. Ed? And what was fishing like growing up?
Well, mainly we caught them to eat.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't, there wasn't any such thing as throwback. You know, I mean, if we caught them, boy, that was going in the pan.
Yeah.
And it's changed a whole lot. But still, I like a good fish fry. Man, I don't cull one of them at all. And I think fishing has changed some. Some people just wouldn't even think about keeping the fish. I mean, they're going to catch and release. But most of us only used to release ones that were too small.
And there wasn't any that got too small.
Could get a fillet out of it.
But did you take these boys fishing at all?
Well, that Elk River, we pretty well burned that road up going over there fishing. And it was, for years there, it was probably one of the best trout streams in the Southeast.
Yeah, and that's cool. The Elk River there. Y'all grew up fishing
there? Elk River many times. Yeah. Well, skipped school a few times to fish the Elk River.
Did you have any part of that, skipping school to go fish?
He didn't approve it. He didn't approve it, but he tolerated it, I guess.
He will not confirm nor deny.
Yeah. There was never any fisticuffs, but there was some people that got upset with how somebody would treat them in a canoe or that sort of thing, but we all was good nature type fun.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's been fun to reflect today and hear the stories and talk with you guys. I really appreciate y'all being with us.
Yeah, thank y'all. Yeah, thank you for the life we had there at growing up doing what
Blue
we do.
Springs Road.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a good time.
Yeah.
And it still is.
That's right.
This old man.
Yeah.
I live in paradise down there.
Well, it's great to see you still hard at it and enjoying life and getting outdoors when you can. And
well, this area we're talking about is Yanali. I mean, it's Yanali. It's where we grew up.
Yeah.
It's a wildlife management area that everybody can go enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's probably, I guess, one of our biggest wildlife management areas.
I don't think it's much of a secret. That's where a lot of turkeys over there and a lot of deer.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's a good plug. Go out and check our website, tnwildlife.org. Click the Where to Hunt button. Look at those WMAs. Find you a place to go. Find you a place to hunt, fish here in Tennessee, and just keep enjoying the outdoors. This is Tennessee Wildcast. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for watching, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Stay connected with TWRA by visiting our website at tnwildlife.org and follow us on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Join us as we celebrate 75 years of conservation in our great state. You can invest in Tennessee's wildlife future by purchasing a license at GoOutdoorsTennessee.com. That's GoOutdoorsTennessee.com.